Readers Entertainment presents Book Lights, where we are shining the light on good books.
Happy Tuesday, everyone. And if you're listening live, it's voting day. Don't forget to go vote. And if you have never listened before, I'm Lisa Kessler. I'm your host. I write paranormal romance and urban fantasy, and I love the author that we have on today. I'm so excited that Julie Kagawa could be with us. And if you don't know Julie yet, you are in for such a treat. She writes amazing, fantastical YA fiction that is not just for young adults. Everyone reads it. They're fabulous. Anyway, if you don't know Julie, I'm going to read her bio for you. Julie Kagawa is the New York Times bestselling author of the Iron Fae and Blood of Eden series. She was born in Sacramento, but nothing exciting happened to her there. So at the age of 9, she and her family moved to Hawaii, where she soon discovered was inhabited by carnivorous insects, colonies of house geckos, and frequent hurricanes. She spent much of her time in the ocean when she wasn't getting chased out of it by reef sharks, jellyfish, and the odd eel. When not swimming for her life, Julie immersed herself in books, often to the chagrin of her school teachers, who would find she hid them in the novels behind her math textbook. Who hasn't done that, right? Anyway, Julie now writes full-time, and she does not live in Louisville, Kentucky anymore. She's now in North Carolina, where there's a beach. Have you gone back in? Are there sharks in North Carolina?
There are sharks in North Carolina. Hi, everyone. I'm Julie Kagawa. I'm so happy to be here. Yes, there are sharks in North Carolina, and we've been known to find megalodon teeth that have washed up on the shore sometimes. So, yes, there are sharks.
Oh, my gosh. Did you go see the movie Meg?
The Meg? No, not yet. I'm certain I'll see it when it comes out on Netflix.
Yeah. Oh, you
I
have
don't
to
need
see
to,
it.
Like,
it's so
imagine
good.
That when I'm, you know, bobbing in, you know, the ocean, just like to see this gigantic fin like break the surface. That would be a little frightening.
Yeah, you may not go back in the water. So I also, if you're listening on Blog Talk right now, I did put a link to Julie's website and her Twitter. She's very active on Twitter, and you're on Facebook too. Are you active over there too?
Yes, I'm mostly active on Twitter, but I'll post pictures on Facebook. I have a fan page, Julie Kagawa Author, so you can find me there. It's usually pictures of dogs, my two dogs, who have a birthday today. So there's like a birthday picture of my dog looking very spoiled. They have a cake and everything. So,
oh, I'm going to have to go look after the show. I love dog pictures.
My two dogs have an Instagram, and their Instagram is twice as popular as my Instagram.
Oh, dogs. So you have a new book out called Shadow of the Fox. Do you want to tell everybody why they should run out and get it?
Yes. So Shadow of the Fox is an aging fantasy based on Japanese myth and legend, is what I tell everybody, but it's really an anime in book form. I love anime and I love manga, and I, you know, was obsessed with, I love Inuyasha and Naruto, Princess Mononoke, Spirited Away, and I love anime. So I wanted to write a book featuring a lot of the anime and characters that I came across. So the protagonist of Shadow of the Fox is a kitsune, which in Japanese myth is a shape-shifting magical fox. And they can shapeshift into humans, and they have all sorts of illusion magic. And they're really fun little creatures. And this protagonist is half kitsune. Her name is Yumeko. She's been raised in a temple of monks all her life. And one day she discovers that the monks are the guardians of an ancient artifact called the Dragon's Prayer. Together, it summons a great dragon god who will grant the summoner one wish, anything they desired. But because it was used for evil in the past, the dragon scroll was split into three pieces and hidden, and that her temple guards one of the pieces. She learns this just as the temple is attacked by an army of demons, and all the monks are killed, and so she has to flee with the piece of the dragon scroll and try to find her way across this mythical Japan, meeting all sorts of legends and myths of Asian folklore.
That sounds amazing. So this is in like a fantasy world of Japan, right? Not contemporary.
This is a mythical ancient Japan. If anybody knows Japanese history, think the Sengoku era of old Japan, which is when all the clans were fighting each other.
Okay. Did you have to do a ton of research for that?
I did research a lot of really around the Sengoku era and the Onin War, but a lot of it comes from my own love of anime. I've like watched years and years of anime, so I've noticed that there's a lot of reoccurring creatures appear in anime time and time again. Kitsune are probably the most popular, but there's also like Tanuki and Oni and Neko and all of these funny little creatures that just kind of pop up in anime, and I love all the myths of Japan, so I wanted to incorporate them into Shadow of the Fox.
Fun! And this one is a series, right? This is the first book of the series.
Yes. Yeah. There will be three books, so it will be a trilogy.
So, not for a spoiler, but do you think at some point we're going to see a dragon?
Oh, I'm sure you'll see a dragon. yes, there will definitely be a dragon in one of the later books.
Yay!
Yeah.
Because you have another dragon series, right?
I do. The Talon series. It was my one before Shadow of the Fox, and that's about modern day dragons.
And that. Right. And is that one going to be a movie?
It was, when it first came out, or when Talon was first being written, it was option, but a lot of things can happen, and the option ran out, and they didn't renew the option, so at this point it is not going to be moving to a movie, sadly.
Oh, bummer. I was looking forward to that. But I had Steve Alton on the show a few weeks ago who wrote the book of the Meg, and he waited 23 years. That book kept getting optioned over and over. 23 years before the Meg finally came out. So I'm going to hold out hope that we're going to get dragons.
Maybe, it'll happen someday. It can always be re-optioned. But yes, so many things have to happen, and any one of them can fall through. And a very small percentage of books that are optioned actually get made into movies. So everything has to work just right.
Yeah, all the planets have to align, and people with money have to show up, and it's a wild thing.
And authors have no say in whether or not their books become movies. I'll just throw that out there because I get asked often, when are you going to make your books into a movie? And I'm like, authors have no say. It's all Hollywood. Hollywood has to come knocking.
Right.
I wish I could. I wish I could make my books.
Did you, one of my huge guilty pleasures was Teen Wolf, and they had a Kitsune on it. Did you watch that?
Mm-hmm. Kira? I haven't watched Teen Wolf, but I do know the character of Kira.
Oh, okay.
He seemed cool.
Okay. Because, oh my gosh, she was so cool. But she had like electricity. she could control electricity. Does your kitsune do that too?
No, that was the Teen Wolf kitsune kind of strayed a little bit away from the original kitsune.
From the original?
Normal.
TV wasn't real?
No, TV's not real. Oh my goodness. Normally kitsune aren't, they can't control lightning. They they have something called Kitsune Beat, which is Kitsune Fire, or which is fox fire. And it generally,
it's a
heatless blue-white fire that doesn't burn anything, but it makes these cool little balls of fox fire. And that's used to, you know, kind of lure people into the dark woods at night.
Oh.
Yeah. They're trolls.
There's always the dark side. Is your character at the beginning of the book, does she already know what she is, or does she discover it as the book goes?
No, she is fully aware of what she is, and she uses her fox magic sort of to play pranks on the monks in the temple. So she's kind of a little prankster. It gets her into a lot of trouble. Fox magic is illusion magic, so she turns the cat into a tea kettle and makes it dance around, or she'll, you know, turn a log invisible in front of the steps, and, you know, the monks are constantly falling for her pranks, and they're not very happy sometimes, and then she gets punished with, you know, mountains of chores, but she can't help it because she's part of her kitsune nature.
Oh my gosh, it sounds like it should be like a Disney movie. We should get Disney involved.
That would be pretty cool.
So, right? Yeah, that would be cool. Disney, if you're listening, let's do this. So, for you, is it more fun to write in a fantasy world or a real contemporary setting? Because you've done both, right?
Yes, and for me, it's far more fun to write in a fantasy world. I loved writing Talon, but Talon was harder because it took place in the real world, in the modern world, and the only magical things in there were the dragons themselves. And so, you know, I had to know boring things like how long does it take a person to walk from one side of the city to the other, and, you know, they can't just teleport there, or they can't open up a portal and, like, walk through, and, you know, just boring real world stuff like that, where in fantasy I can just, you know, kind of make up the rules as I go.
Do you plot it out ahead of time, or do you pants it and figure out the world as you're writing?
Usually I have a good idea of the world when I start. I don't have a good idea of the story plot. Usually I'll have an ending in mind for both the end of the series and the end of each book, and then I can write toward that ending. And I know I have certain things that I know have to happen, like certain plot points. Like, I know this has to happen, this has to happen, they have to kiss, and then the book has to end. So I will write toward those high points, but everything in between is kind of made up.
Nice. That's exactly how I do it. So this one's there. For me, if I overplot, then I feel like I'm writing a term paper. I already know how it's turned out.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel you.
Yeah. And then sometimes I write myself into a corner. I'm like, how did we get here? And then I'll have to kind of back out and, you know, try to write myself out of the corner. But it usually
Right. And sometimes when you do that, you discover something much better than what you had planned, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
At least that happens.
Occasionally, my publisher will want me to turn in summaries of the novel. I'm like, yeah, I'll turn in a summary, but you know that it's not going to go by the summary at all.
Right.
And they're like, okay, it's fine. Just give us the general idea. I'm like, okay, here you go. And then the book is like completely different than the summary. I don't know.
Right. None of these characters are in this book. So can you tell us, because I think it's super cool that this book was kind of the book of your heart, but I think people think that writers, you know, you set out and you follow this path and everything happens, and it almost is never like that. It's a crazy writing journey. Can you kind of tell people the background of, you know, how you started writing, and that this book was, you know, the book of your heart, right?
Yeah, well, I started writing this book, you know, a long, long time ago, before the Iron Sage, before the Iron King. I was writing this book. Back then it was titled something different, and it was an adult fantasy, not a YA, because back then there was no YA.
Right.
wasn't a thing yet. So I finished this book, and it actually got me my agent, who loved the book, and tried to, you know, she took me on as a client because of it. But when she tried to sell it to the publishers, nobody was taking Asian fantasy at that point. There wasn't a market for it. They said no one was buying it, which I found odd because it was about the time where the manga explosion had just happened, and the bookstores were just like full of manga.
Right.
No one's buying Japanese
fantasy.
People were
sitting in the bookstore reading it.
Reading manga. We went, but I didn't.
Yeah.
So, she tried to sell it for a year and kept getting the same response. You know, it's a great story, it's well written, but no one is going to want Asian fantasy. There's no market for it. So after a year of trying to sell it, she told me, okay, look, we're going to put this on the back burner for a while. We're going to put it away, and you need to write me something else. Do you have an idea of what you're going to write next? Do you have any ideas? I'm like, well, I kind of have this idea about a Ares when taken into the fairy world, and then she goes after him to rescue him. What do you think of that? And she said, yes, write me that book. I think I can sell that book. So I did. I wrote, that was the beginning of The Iron King, obviously. And I was really eager to finish it, so I nanoed The Iron King, NaNoWriMo, which is writing 50,000 words.
Which is happening right now.
Which is happening right now, because November is Nano Month. So, yay, Nano!
Mm-hmm.
I was really eager to finish The Iron King, and I finished it in 2 months. It's a 100,000-word book. I finished it in 2 months using Nano.
Wow!
And, yeah. So, yes, The Iron King is a Nano book. So I turned it into my agent, who started to shop it around. And at that point, Harlequin Teen was just starting to look around for new YA books. They were just starting their YA imprint. And it happened to land on my editor's desk, and she read it, and she loved it. And within a couple of weeks, I had a 3-book contract.
Wow.
That was the beginning of my career as a writer. And I wrote lots of Iron Fae books, and then I wrote The Blood of Eden series. And then they wanted to me to write more Iron Fae books, so I did. And then I wrote the Talon series. But I throughout all of this, I never forgot that first book, the book that I really, really loved about the Kitsune and Japanese fantasy. So after I finished the Talon saga, I told my editor, hey, I have this series idea of, a kitsune, and it's a Japanese fantasy. What do you think of that? She's like, yeah, send it to me, and we'll see. So I rewrote Shadow of the Fox as a YA, and I sent it to her, and the whole We Meet the First Books thing that happened, and it's an awesome time, for new writers and new diverse writers are coming out, and it's fabulous. All the diverse books are coming out, and they really liked it. And so finally, after over 10 years, Shadow of the Fox is finally coming out. And I couldn't be happier.
That is so amazing. So everyone out there who's listening, who has, thinking about writing a book, never give up, because, 10 years, and now you're holding it in your hand.
The original title was called Kitsune's Heart. Change it because very few people would know what a kitsune was, so we changed it to Shadow, which is more appropriate because if you read it, you'll know. It's a very appropriate title. There's a ninja who's from the Shadow Clan, and very appropriate title. We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah. Well, since it was originally an adult book, do you ever think that you might write an adult series, or is it always going to be YA?
I'm not sure. I think, even as an adult book, the characters were all, the two main characters were 16 and 17, so that didn't change. And I love writing for teenagers. I love writing in this age group because it seems that, YA is just a time of first. It's your first love, your first kiss, your first, getting away from your parents and starting to live your own life. And I love the coming of age stories, and YA is perfect for that. So I will probably stick in YA for a while longer.
Are there any other genres in YA that you ever think about writing, or are you really happy with the fantasy paranormal?
I've toyed with the idea of writing a sci-fi. I like, space opera sci-fi, not the really hard sci-fi. With aliens and other worlds, and it's kind of fantasy-ish, just with, other worlds and other races and aliens and all of that. So I toyed with the idea of a sci-fi. I've even toyed with the idea of a horror. See if I can, try my a horror.
Oh, I would love that.
Yeah, like something really
You and
scary.
I also share a love of killing off characters. Sometimes I see your tweets about drowning in your readers' tears. I laugh.
Your tears feed my muse. The muse demands tears.
Yeah, sometimes they make me cry. I'm like, but they have to die. I'm so sorry.
You know that you're doing your job well when you can make your readers cry.
Right. So in the Iron Fae, I know that you wrote like the first ones and it was done, but then you wrote more. What did you have to do to make the, is it like a spinoff Fae, or because was the first one done? How did you do that?
Well, the original trilogy, it was originally just supposed to be a trilogy. And the Iron Queen was supposed to be it, with the original ending of Megan and Ash not together. That was it. That was supposed to be the last of it. And I wrote it, and I turned it into my editor, and I was, really feeling smug and proud of myself because, ha-ha, the two lovers don't end up together, and Megan has to have she has to learn responsibility and to become a queen. But to become a queen, she has to, leave her the love of her life, and he can't ever see her again. And that's awesome and great. And then my editor calls me, and she's like, no, you cannot sit like this. Your fans are going to kill you. I'm like, but responsibility and tragedy and ultimate noble sacrifice. And she's just like, no. I will let you keep this ending if you write me another book. So I did. I'm like, okay, fine. I'll give them their bloody happily ever after. So that's when I wrote The Iron Knight, which is, it shifts points of view to Ash, and it's Ash's journey back to Megan. And then something happened in The Iron Knight that I didn't expect when Ash saw a future vision of himself with Megan and a family and all of that. So when that wrapped up and they asked me for more Iron Fae books, I was thinking, I loved Ash and Megan in a pretty good place. I don't really want to rock the boat or screw anything up. What can I do? Oh, wait.
Right.
Ethan is pretty screwed up. I'll write a book about Ethan. So that's how the second Iron Fae series came about, with Ethan a little bit farther down the road. And he also meets the character that Ash saw in the Iron Knight.
The
character from the Iron Knight. Yes, in the vision.
Nice. So that was pretty genius. You flashed it forward a little bit and found some more screwed up people to mess with.
It was totally, yes, I totally knew that was going to happen, yes, and it was all planned. It wasn't planned at all.
No. I love that. Sometimes you write things, and it must be like your subconscious. I know I met Ray Bradbury a couple times, and he was talking about there's a superconscious that's once stories told, and you know, if you're if you're honest and you just follow what the story does, it's all there for you. And sometimes you go in there and you're like, oh my God, I was a genius, and you didn't plan it at all.
No plan.
But
yeah, none of that was planned.
I am so smart.
So
I know that.
Interesting. But,
go ahead.
Really quick, though. For all the Iron Fae fans who might still be listening right now, after Shadow of the Fox wraps up, after this trilogy, my next project is going back to the Iron Fae. And write a new Iron Fae series with the original characters, with Megan Ashcock.
What?
Yep.
Wow.
So more Iron Fae
That's
books
huge.
Are coming after Shadow of the Fox. Yes.
Wow. Oh my gosh, that is so exciting. So
excited.
It's gonna have the same characters. So are they older?
Uh-huh. They will
oh
be,
gosh.
Well, they don't age, but yes, it will be after all of the events of, you know, the Iron Fae and then the Lost Prince series. It'll be a little bit farther down the road.
Oh, my gosh. Wow, that is super exciting.
Yeah.
Are you already writing those, or are you finishing up the Fox series?
I have to finish up Shadow of the Fox, or I will, you know, want to just, it's hard to write two series at once, so I have to come to one before I jump to another.
Right. Are you on the second book or the third book of the Foxes right now?
I just turned in edit of the second book, so I'm starting the third book of Shadow of the Fox.
Oh, I love writing last books. They're so epic.
I do. I love writing the last book.
That's
the
when
final
you kill people.
Battle, the final, yes, everybody died. Everyone will die.
Everyone will die. There will be dragons.
Yes. Lots of tragedy and blood and death and dragons and, yes. The ultimate noble sacrifice.
I know. Well, before we run out of time, though, I have one more question on my sheet here, and that is, I know you're a huge video gamer. Are you ever, is it ever possible that some of your book worlds could end up in a video game?
That, again, is not up to me. While I would love that to happen, that's up to the game companies. And usually, that only happens if the book itself made it big, like big enough to become a movie.
Oh, okay.
It's fairly rare for books to actually become video games.
Okay, but we could maybe have an Iron Fae video game, right?
That would all be awesome.
Wouldn't that
I
be
would
fun?
That usually
Tromps around
would have
in
to
the
come
world
after the movie, so.
Right, yeah. So come on, movie companies.
Yeah. If you can get
well,
a movie
we
made,
running...
then maybe you can get a video game made.
Right? Well, we're running out of time, but I wanted, do you have any, the new book is out, do you have any contests or anything you want readers to connect with you anywhere?
No contest at the moment, but if you want to contact me, I'm always, I'm usually on Twitter, at Jay Kagawa, or my Facebook, or my Instagram, or my dog's Instagram, any of those, I will.
And follow her dog.
Yes. Ronan and Gambit is the name, Ronan_and_Gambit_. And yes, you can join their followers, which they have more followers than me, many more followers than me.
Well, thank you so much for being on. This was so fun, and I'm looking forward to the rest of the KitchenAid books.
Thank you for joining us on Book Lights. Be sure to connect with us at readersentertainment.com for articles, blogs, videos, and podcasts that matter to readers.